this pod is now known as the Beefy Keeper Pod. Right? Episode Beefy Keeper. Right, on you go.
Yep, and as the saying goes, you can only piss with the dick you've got.
Exactly, exactly. Yes. Or if you're comfy where I am, it's Coke.
Right. We certainly got that. Certainly more clinical fishing.
Clinical fishing?
What sport am I playing here?
Derek, are you still pissed?
I think I might be.
Clinical finishing.
Yes, we got more clinical finishing in I'll better say that again because that's a minute. Clinical finishing, yes.
Right,
yes.
There's stories coming out all the time, so we really don't know who to believe. Oh, God. Bloody phone's going off everywhere, man. Yeah. Give me 2 seconds, Derek.
No worries. To the next edition of the iReady podcast. So after a wee bit of a unplanned break due to scheduling issues and all day drinking sessions, we're finally back. A lot's happened in that wee break, but we'll try and briefly summarise it. We're just going to briefly summarise the games, briefly go over what's happened off the field as well. So as usual, I'm back with my co-host Dave. How are you doing?
I'm fine, mate, and just like what Derek said, we were going to do this last Wednesday, but then a wee drinking session took place for us and a few people that we know, so that got banned. No offence, so all the listeners, but when it comes between you and having a few pints, and the pints will win every single time, I'm sorry.
Of course, of course. So, we're just going to smash right into this, and we're going to go down the tunnel and onto the field. Right, so we've got 3 games to cover today, so we're not going to do our usual in-depth analysis of the games, but what we're going to do is just briefly go over the games, over the teams. So, first game was on Saturday the 26th of October, which was away to East Fife. It was a 4-0 victory. We set up in a 4-4-2 formation with Bell, Wallace, Jig, Mojney, Foster, Law McLeod, Black, Peralta, and Daly and Clark. On the subs bench, we had Simonson, Crawford, Hutton, Little, Forey, Templeton, and Stevie Smith. So just a first half summary, we created a lot more than East Fife with a lot of the chances, but a lot of them were off target though, which was a problem. All glancing headers past the post and things like that. That's become quite a worry in the last few games, is the fact that we're creating chances, but we're not putting them on target. East Fife only had really one or two efforts. We dominated possession. We were the better team, just weren't getting the breakthrough there. McLeod was great going forward. Had great movement, great balls as well going forward, passing movements. So it ended up first half 0-0. Second half was much better with the shots on target. It was more urgency. We took our chances. The first goal came on an OG across from Wallace. And the guy tried to slide in and clear it, and he put it in the back of the net. And then on fire, man, Daly had a hat trick. All fantastic goals from Daly.
Yeah, he's starting to really. His confidence is now like as high as it can get now, and he's, you know, the main man up front, which is really good to see. Because as I say, when we said before, when he came in, people were a wee bit puzzled, but he's making a lot of people eat their words now, and he's on fire at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on to him a wee bit later as well. Certainly, it was a good overall game, I thought, and just as I said, the one worry was the fact that we're creating chances, but we're very, very few on target, and then I think even in the second half, we did put a lot more off target, but there was more urgency to it, and, you know, we actually took our chances when we were presented to us.
I think a lot of the smaller teams will be well up for the first half. I know we said this last season, we'll find that teams will tire in the second half, which didn't happen, but I think that was just because we didn't really capitalise on much last year and we didn't really play that well last season. But this season, we are digging the results out, which is encouraging. It just always seems to be a game of two halves where we don't particularly play well in one half, but we play well in the other half, and it's usually that's what helps us get the results, and it was the same in that match.
Yep, absolutely. I'm glad you said the game of two halves there, because that's a good segue right into the next game, which was Tuesday the 29th of October. It was in the Ramsden's Cup semi-final against Stenhouse Muir. It was at Stenhouse Muir. It was an unchanged formation. Slightly reduced subs bench, though, because of the rules of the Ramsden's Cup. So we only had Simonson, Hutton, Little, Forey and Templeton. First half, there was a lot of people on Twitter criticising it. And I disagreed with that. I thought it was a very decent first half. We had a lot of chances, both on and off target. So at least we were getting them on target. We did hit the bar twice. From rockets from Peralta and Law from probably about 25-30 yards. And we should have been about 3 or 4 up in the first half, but we went into the half 0-0.
I agree with you. We created a lot of chances. We were by far the better team. I think if we had went even into, you know, half-time 1-0 up, we would have won the game quite comfortably, but we didn't. But at the same time, when it got to, you know, when the half-time whistle went, I said to myself, oh, this is going to be no problem in the second half. But we toiled in the second half, but luckily we still managed to get the goal.
Yeah, second half, I don't know what happened. I mean, normally we've got a habit of playing okay or quite shoddy in the first half. And there must have been a half-time rocket from the gaffer. And, you know, we come out all guns blazing. Well, we've certainly done the opposite this game. We just totally fell away. We didn't create a lot in the second half of the Stenhouse Muir game. When we did hit a lot, it was off target as well. Stenhouse Muir seemed to be a wee bit more up for it, but they never even threatened really a lot either.
What you've got to remember is we did beat them 8-0 the last time that we played them, and that was at Ibrox. So they were going to be well up just for keeping the score down and trying to frustrate us as much as possible, which they did, because I kind of expected that. There's a lot of people were predicting there was going to be a high scoreline, but if you go in and play a team that you absolutely annihilated no long before in a cup match, and you know they were going to be well up for it, and they were. And to be fair to Stenhouse Muir, they defended really well and they were keeping us out and they were forcing us to have long range shots and things like that. So maybe being a wee bit critical, because every single player in that team would have been saying there's no way that we're going to get hammered in this game again, that'll no happen. So I had kind of thought that I maybe thought we could have scored a couple of goals rather than just the one.
Aye. Daly scored the goal in the 74th minute, but just before that I was genuinely unsure about what happens. Does it go into extra time and then penalties, or does it go to a replay? So I actually put a tweet out on our account, obviously got a reply saying that, yeah, the fountain of knowledge that is Sandy Clark did say that at half time, that it would go straight to extra time.
I just had a feeling, because that happened in one of the previous rounds in one of the games as well. I'm sure that it went to extra time and penalties, so I did suspect that it would be, you know, a winner regardless what the score was that night.
I mean, obviously, as I said, Daly scored in the 74th minute, so my tweet was null and void there, because we were winning 1-0. So we saw out the game anyway, and that one made us progress through to the final of the Ramsden's Cup, which is getting held in April, strangely, at Easter Road. But we'll talk about that in the next section. But certainly we're playing Raith Rovers anyway, so I'm sure they'll give us a good game. They're obviously going to be up for the cup as well. We'll need to obviously have our wits about us in that game as well, because we don't want to. We've reached the final this time, so I would like to think we'd go in and win it this time.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to the latest game that we played, which was Airdrieonians at Ibrox on the Friday the 1st of November, which was in the Scottish Cup.
Yep.
Now, for a Friday night, it was a bit strange, the fact that it was not on TV. I'm not even sure of the reasons for it being Friday night, and I'm not even sure why it wasn't on TV. So
I will tell you why it was on a Friday night, because Celtic were also drawn at home in the league on Saturday, so they couldn't have had both Old Firm teams playing at home on the Saturday. So this is maybe just one of the options that they came up with, was to put us on. But like you, I thought if it's a Friday night, surely it's going to be televised. That's the reason it is on a Friday night. But no, it wasn't. It was only on RTV.
Yes. So 22,000 fans, though, for a Friday night, which was pretty impressive, I thought.
Pay at the gate as well. So, you know, it was strange having it on a Friday night. These games, I don't think, are on the season tickets. So no. We'll have to get somebody to clarify that for us. We mean you not being season ticket holders. So, I mean, if it had been the season tickets, I think we would have got a lot more than that. But the fact this was an extra game, it is on a Friday night. No disrespect to Airdrie, but, you know, it wasn't a Premier League team that we were playing. So that's a brilliant crowd for a Friday night against, you know, a smaller club. So well done, everybody that turned up that night.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a lesser attendance for us, but for any other club, I'm sure would be creaming their frillies if they had that kind of attendance, wouldn't they?
22,000 for any SPL club, with exception of maybe one, to be fair to them, they're not getting much more than that on a Saturday. But any SPL club getting 22,000 on a Saturday game at 3 o'clock, you know, they would be going banging on about this sellout Saturday again and how much a success it is and all this nonsense. So, you know, a great crowd for a Friday night, pay at the gate, as well as, you know, having to buy the ticket separately. So well done, guys, everybody that attended.
Yep. So, there was one change in the squad, and that was an enforced change because Black was suspended, and that was going back from last year. So, Kyle Hutton came in and took his place.
Yep, the forgotten man back in the team.
Yep. Subs bench was pretty similar. I think one change in that as well. We had Simonson, Crawford, Aird, Little, Foray, Templeton and Smith. Now, just as a wee aside to this, I did notice in the game that Airdrie had a pretty beefy keeper in there, and I don't mean a beefcake keeper, I mean he was pretty chunky.
You noticed that Airdrie had a beefy keeper? Right, explain yourself. I take it you mean he was rather portly.
Yes, he was rather chunky, yes.
A beefy keeper, right, on you go.
Anyway, the reason for that was that he was a 41-year-old gentleman, and basically what happened is Airdrie had to apply to the SFA and the SPFL for an emergency keeper. I think they had some sort of injury crisis, maybe like we had when we had to draft in Andy Dibble all those years ago. But they applied for an emergency keeper, and the SPFL and the SFA basically fell out over it, saying that no, you're not allowed it, we're not having it. Then Derek Johnson pointed out that he said to the SFA that it's your game, so you make the rules. And they said, oh, right, so it is. So they got granted dispensation for that emergency keeper. Now, if that was the case, I mean, what is the SPFL playing all about? I mean, they surely know the rules. It's not their competition. Why are they denying a club to get a keeper in?
Are you seriously asking about the SFA and knowing their own rules and making up rules, you know, as they go along? Are you serious?
Well, no, this is more the SPFL then. I mean, the SFA, we all know how great they are, but this is the SPFL we're talking about here. It was apparently them that was denying it from what I took from the story.
Again, the governing bodies that be really couldn't organise a piss up my brewery, let's be honest.
No.
But I mean, I take it they were granted a goalie as long as he was beefy.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, more space to fill the goal, wasn't it? But anyway, on the second minute, we did actually have a minute's applause for Fernando Rixon. Now, we'll go into that story again in the next section, but just obviously sad to hear about that. But certainly the well-observed and fantastic tribute to the big guy, and apparently was mirrored from all his old clubs as well throughout Europe. So
he's acknowledged it as well. There's been a lot on Facebook and a lot on Twitter from him saying, you know, that he knows what happened in all these matches with all the fans. And so, you know, he has acknowledged and how pleased he was that everybody done it and everybody's thinking about him and stuff. But we will talk about Fernando later on.
Yes. Moving on, just to go over the first half. I thought it was a decent first half. There was a lot of great skill and there was a lot of one-touch passes and playing the triangle football and things like that. It was good link-up play in midfield. The problem was, again, though, we're creating little in the final third of the park.
I think the good thing for me was the fact that I thought that Nicky Law was starting to come back into, you know, be the player that he was right at the start of the season. He was really taking control of the midfield and driving forward. And when you've got him playing well and McLeod playing well, you know, the whole team starts to play really decent football. So I was more pleased to see that. I did, again, I kind of thought that we would get the breakthrough in the second half. I didn't think that we really looked that, you know, and having a lot of problems back in defence and Airdrie certainly didn't make a lot of chances in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the law point there, because it's maybe been a forgotten about point in the last few weeks, as he certainly has run out of steam compared to what he'd been doing in the first few games when he was a trialist.
He's went off the ball, and I think that's been a big problem, because, like I said, when you've got him driving forward, we create a hell of a lot more chances than we have been, and he has been very, very quiet. But like I said in the last game, Stennis Muir, they put two men on him straight away, because I think they knew that he was a sort of driving force in midfield, so other teams have been putting the shackles on him, but he did come into his own again in this game, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. It's maybe one thing that his position he plays is, we're watching a lot of the games on TV, and maybe the midfield does get bypassed a lot of the time as well on the TV, and you sometimes don't see all the work they do, but so maybe he has been doing that, all that work, and it's just maybe not been the flair player that he was in the first few games. But
I think as well, we've been relying on the big napper of John Daly as well, and when things aren't going our way, the whole midfield is getting bypassed, and we start booting the high balls into the box, which isn't great to watch. It's came off for us, luckily, a few times, but we need to stop relying on that. Daly's a great finisher, we know that, but we need to start creating more chances, ball on deck. So hopefully, Law's coming back on his game. He's just had a wee dip, and hopefully this is him now coming back to being the player that we know he can be.
Yeah. So just to finish off the first half, I mean, Bell never, actually, I don't think he had a save to make, but unfortunately their keeper never had much to do either, because we kept putting either things wide, or we just weren't kind of finishing it off. I mean, we had a lot of chances that great skill working into the box, and then, you know, hitting the shot, and it would rebound off one of their players. So, but overall, I thought the first half was good. It was a good workmanlike performance. We just needed that clinical finishing.
Yeah, definitely.
Certainly in the second half, we got a lot more clinical finishing. Two fantastic, great goals from Daly in quick succession right after kickoff made him to go to his 14th goal of the season, which apparently he scored 15 last year with Dundee United. So the guy is certainly on form now, and he's proven his doubters wrong, as you said.
He's been excellent, especially in the last few games, and some of the goals he's scored, not just the headers, he's had some really quality finishes as well.
The third goal was maybe the pick of the bunch, falling off with Temple. In the 79th minute, Templeton scored what was an uncharacteristic, amazing crossfield ball from Ricky Foster.
Ricky Foster, I know.
And it found the boot of Templeton, and I think he'd taken it first time, and he was under pressure from the defender, and it slotted into the bottom of the net.
Yeah, it was a quality goal. We've said it the last few pods about Templeton. He's a great impact player. He doesn't seem to play like that when he's on for the start of the game, but certainly when he comes on, he's always great for either scoring a goal or at least creating a goal. So, but it was a great goal to see, and I was just really pleased. You know, a bit of quality play for the team and a fantastic goal at the end.
Yep, so certainly to round off, it was a good workmanlike performance all game. As I said, should have been more clinical finishing in the first half, but certainly the second half made up for it, and we got the three goals to win 3-0. So the next game is actually tomorrow night, and surprisingly, I'm away to it.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. You kept that quiet.
Yes, as we said in the first pod, as we do struggle to get to games because of scheduling issues and work and things like that, and more recently, money, saving for a wedding is not an easy thing, put it that way. It's at Ibrox, obviously, against Dunfermline, and it's the rearranged game that was meant to be the 5 o'clock kick-off a few Saturdays back.
Right, guys, so if, and hopefully not, we do not get a victory here, we know whose fault it is for putting a jinx on the team for actually going to a match.
Yes, me.
You got any of your mates or anything?
A few of my mates, yes, John's going with me, so right. Maybe as a review for next week, we'll get him on.
You'll have to get his schedule in for next week so that he can get him on, so we can do a piece since the two. You can do an in-depth analysis of actually what happened, so that's great.
I'm expecting, to be honest, the same team again, barring any suspensions or injuries and things like that. It's been a pretty settled team for the last maybe 4 or 5 games now, and it's obviously we've got the victories. Maybe not the greatest of performances all the games, but you know, certainly we get the victories nonetheless.
I have a feeling the fact that it's Dunfermline, the fact that there was, you know, a lot of talk about Dunfermline being very vocal about us when we went into administration, and the fact that they've went into administration as well, the fact that Dunfermline are, and again, no offence to the teams in this league, are effectively championship stroke SPL quality that Rangers will put on a performance tomorrow night. So I think Dunfermline will bring quite a big support with them. And I've got a feeling that Rangers will put on a really good performance tomorrow night. I've got a feeling I've got some hope and praying that I'm right, that I say that, and you're not coming back to me totally slating my predictions. I'm not going to tell you what I think the score's going to be, but I think we're going to put on a really good performance tomorrow night.
Yeah, I would like to think so anyway. It's what we're due, an outstanding performance again at Ibrox, so let's hope it is. So.
Yes.
Yes, so we'll get back to you in that one next week.
Aye, definitely.
Right, so we're going to move on now and we're going to go down the tunnel.
Quite simply, we're the only club in the world who could do that. We are the people.
Right, once again, where the hell do we start with this one? First thing that came out was that Stuart Regan says the SFA's had no contact from Rangers over Dave King. So obviously after much speculation and an inaccurate report from the Daily Record, which said that the AIM had cleared Dave King with no issues about being a board member at Rangers and being involved at Rangers, there was obviously speculation that the SFA would be with no issue as well, because Dave King's more or less said, yeah, I've clarified it, and you know there'll be no issues there. So Stuart Regan, in an interview with Scott Saunders, Sports Sound or whatever the hell they call it, he's basically came out and said that no, we've had no confirmation from Rangers himself about looking into putting Dave King in a board position there. So that's one of these things that it's always going to be about paper talk. It's speculation at this point just now. I'm sure if and when the time comes, the relevant papers will be submitted, and I'm sure with the SFA being who the SFA is, they'll put as many blockers up as they can. Just one thing on that though is it would be total hypocritical for them to have any issue with Dave King, considering we've got a convicted VAT fraud person in the name of Easdale on the board as it is just now.
Well, like you just said a second ago, it's just all paper talk, but I'm afraid that's all we've been going by the last few months. It's just all paper talk. Daily Record are desperate to get as many stories on Rangers as they possibly can, but it's been like that for years now. Touched upon it in the last pod. We don't know who to believe anymore. There's stories coming out here, there and everywhere, because there are so many factions fighting against each other to get on the board, slagging everybody else off for each one of these factions. The papers are speaking to one set of people and the other set of people. There's loads of stories coming out. Really don't know who to believe. We keep saying this. We want the AGM to, you know, happen as quickly as possible. But again, with more and more and more people coming out, people blocking it, I really don't know when that's going to be. And the whole thing's just turning into a complete fucking laughing stock.
Yep. I mean, one thing that's breaking this morning in a lot of the papers is the AGM has been set for the 18th of December. So if that's true, at least it's a set, but it's another 6 weeks. So there's another 6 weeks damage that can be done to your club.
Exactly. And the papers will jump on that. Everybody will be in there to try and get on the good side of the supporters so that they get their votes in and stuff like that. It's just, again, I'm staying well clear the newspapers that I have done for the last two years anyway, but I'll certainly not be reading anything the Daily Record puts out.
No. Right. So the next thing was, I believe that the last time we recorded, there was a meeting with Jim McCall and his group with the supporters, associations and trusts. The minutes came out of that. It was really a lot about nothing, to be honest. It was slightly more in depth about what their plans are. One of the things that was rumoured to be is they were going to break who Blue Pitch Holdings and Margarita are, but that's failed to materialise. They were just basically going on more about what their plans are, who the backers are, like Scott Murdoch and Alex Wilson. They never obviously went so much into detail because they're obviously going to be restricted as well, given the fact that they're on the outside right now. They've not got access to all the ins and outs about what the goings-on are.
I believe that Jim McCall also was floating the idea of a new chief executive also, who was the ex-Liverpool chief executive.
Certainly, on paper, their plans look good, but we've seen this all before. And one thing as well, Jim McCall, not long after that, did do a televised interview with Sky Sports, and
it was Jim White.
Yes, hi folks here. Yeah. And it was unusual for Jim McCall because he doesn't quote the media at all. So it was quite interesting. Certainly, again, like the minutes of the meeting, he spoke a very good game, and he was very, very clear about what he said. However, this is the problem, is we're getting to this untrusting phase because everybody beforehand has spoke a very good game, and on paper it's always been good, but then as soon as push comes to shove, something happened and it turned out to be a farce.
Yeah.
The difference with McCall, I think, though, is they're proper Rangers fans this time. They're not like Charles Green and Craig White. They are proper Rangers fans. They've invested money before. They've got a history of buying season tickets for us and things like that, so certainly that's one good thing in their favour.
I know we'll have a laugh and joke about Ill Bill and his blog. I've not read one of his blogs for a while, but I had a wee chuckle the other night when I read it, when he was talking about Blue Pitch and Margarita, and he was kind of claiming off record that he knew who were involved in these things, and all the Rangers fans out there that had any shadow of a doubt should be giving them a chance, because when we actually see the calibre of people who are behind these investment groups, then everybody will be delighted. But I had to chuckle there, because if there was any high profile investors behind these two groups, I'm sure they would have been out quoting themselves in the media as being the saviour of Rangers and everything like that. So I thought it was quite funny that he came away with something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the worry for everyone is the fact that Charles Greens and the Craig Whites are going to be still, you know, they're the ones behind these two factions. I don't know how to take it. Again, it's, we're not going to know. There's a lot of spin in it as well. There's a lot of different opinions, and I would like to think that's not the case. I mean, it would mean the SFA's not done their job with the vetting. It would mean that the whole £1 million investigation into it, what the fuck was that all about?
Farce, right, exactly. Yeah. Again, we've said that the newspapers are loving this at the moment. It's given them more stories to fire out there, get everybody wound up, make all our haters out there think it's hilarious and brilliant and all that. So it's just like we said, it's turning into a farce. Get this AGM sorted as quickly as possible. Get us a board in there, a settled board that are going to take the club forward, and then that'll be the end of all this pish that we're having to read and listen and talk about constantly, because we really don't know what's true and what's not true now. It's just a farce.
I mean, one thing, I'm going to play slightly devil's advocate here. Now, Jim McCall has probably quite rightly said that I'm not investing any money in Rangers just now, especially for the fact that I've got my own businesses and interests to look after, and it's not fair on the shareholders there. Now, I'm taking the point of view of, right, I'm a billionaire, I'm one of the richest men in Scotland, I'm a massive fan of the club. If I'm in the position just now, I don't want to get involved in the board, which is understandable, but, you know, I want to help Rangers out because I know they need money. I would freely give them X amount of £1 million. His reasoning, as I said, for that is he's not wanting to do that because he doesn't want to get involved, you know, in terms of the running of the club, which is fair enough. But we're not asking for you to get involved in the club that way. Just give us the fucking money. But in that respect, though, is I would say he's probably going to be reluctant, and I'm pretty sure he's came out and said this, I don't know who this money's going to, so I'm not going to give any of my money to some shysters at the end of the day if they're just going to steal the money away, which puts the fact that who are the behind Blue Pitch Holdings?
That's, if it was me and you, if we had a lot of money, which we had earned hard work, successful businesses, we wanted to invest, would you be wanting to part with a load of your money no knowing who the money is actually going to go to? Or would you be parting with your money once you knew that you were kind of in control of where it was going and what was going to be happening? I can see his point that way. I would probably be exactly the same thing. That's why the supporters really need to know who exactly are behind, you know, who is running the club. Where are all these company names coming from, and who are actually running them, you know, taking to do with the running of your club? It's an easy question. It's something that could be easily answered as well. It would take away a lot of the doubt. But as you say, as soon as the media get a hold of names like Craig White, that's when the supporters start worrying, and, you know, it just becomes a total and utter shambles. We just want to know who the people are behind these two so-called companies that are wanting to invest or have invested money into the club. That's it. End of story. I really don't see what the problem is, unless they have got something to hide.
Possibly. Anyway, moving on again from this. Yep. Not long after that, Rangers put an advertisement in the Financial Times looking for a CEO of exceptional quality.
Yeah, well, so I take it you were the first person to put your CV in then, Derek.
Absolutely, guy. I'm absolutely a stand-up guy, you know.
Right, Nico.
Yes, a bit strange that they're looking through from that. I don't know, I've never heard of many other football clubs advertised like that for a CEO, but maybe it's because it's Rangers, it's never been highlighted before. So
That's just what I was going to say. You probably find that there could quite a few football clubs do it that way. Vast majority of them will actually headhunt folk first of all, you know, to take it, but probably find there's a lot of clubs do that. But the fact that this is Rangers and the newspapers, again, I'm being very anti-media this morning, but because it is Rangers and, you know, the newspapers would be jumping on it, it would be highlighted that this is Rangers struggling to get a CEO and this is what we've got to do to try and get one and all this nonsense. So, just again, it's all to do with the media. We'll see what happens. Like I said before, Jim McCall had his plans of who he wanted to come in to be the CEO of the club. But again, nothing will happen until the AGM happens now. So.
Right. So the next day, Dave King had a meeting with I can't really call it the board these days when there's only two of them, but he had a meeting with the board and some of the shareholders as well about his plans going forward. Now, what came out of that was that they couldn't reach a consensus agreement with the shareholders as to how to go forward, when to set the AGM. And he basically said that certain influential shareholders are unwilling to compromise. What was taken from that was that the Easdales were quite happy for him to be involved and put his motions going forward. And that it was rumoured that the influential shareholders were Blue Pitch Holdings and Margarita, which once again puts back into the fore who the hell are these people. So it's a bit concerning. I mean, the fact that another multimillionaire who's willing to invest money into the club and his experience into the club, and the board and the shareholders don't seem to be willing to accept that, seems awfully strange to me.
It all comes down to who is it that's so against people coming in to try and make the club better financially. Why are these people having such a high stake in the running of the club? Why aren't they coming out and telling us who they are exactly? If they're not, the two names that we mentioned earlier on, are the supporters really, are we going to be that bothered? If they are actual businessmen with a business plan for the club, I think the fans would be quite happy. But again, these two names keep getting touted as being behind these two companies, and it's them that have had the big say in everything that's happened over the last sort of 2 weeks. So we're just, again, looking for clarity more than anything else. But even Dave King's been very quiet on that front as well. He's no willing to name names or anything like that. So what are we supposed to do and what are we supposed to think?
On the back of that, and the later that night, a shot, in fact, it wasn't even a statement, it was more of a headline, came out that Rangers Director of Communications Dreams Trainer has left his post with immediate effect. That was the whole story. You know, there was no further communication at all from the club.
Yeah, and I'm surprised we've not actually heard anything from Trainer. I'm surprised he's not came out and, you know, gave an interview or something like that. But to be fair, when Trainer first came in, it was all guns blazing. He was going to be putting the media in their place and nobody was going to take a swipe at Rangers. But I think ever since the PR company that we're not going to name has came in to play, Jim Trainor's taking a big back seat and we've really not heard anything from him at all. So has he been doing anything the last few months anyway?
From what I've read on Twitter, he does do a lot in the background that is not public knowledge and in the public domain. His role was not just to issue communications and things like that. It was obviously to oversee the whole PR, the whole communications, the social media and thing. And, you know, certainly it started to work from that way, from the look of it. But as you said, the unnamed people came in and they seemed to trump him at every corner. And I think obviously from what we're guessing here is he just got fed up when he left. But yeah, we might not hear anything from him for the fact that it was believed to be that Walter Smith, a gag was put on him when he left. So we'll be lucky if we actually do hear anything. And I think as well, he joined Rangers and his last parting shot, his existing job was having a pop at his industry. I'm sure he can take care of himself, but I think he might struggle to find some regular job again with what he was doing.
Yeah, until we get people in after the AGM, possibly. If there's different people at power after the AGM, we might start hearing things about what actually did go on. But at this time, because we're so fragile and certain people who are running the club at this moment in time, as you say, might have put a gag on things. But if things change, after the AGM, we might get some answers as to exactly what's been going on the last few months.
I think, though, what this really boils down to, though, is we can't trust anything official that comes from the club now, because we know who's running it. We know who's running the PR side of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're asking us to believe what's in the official statements. Well, you know, when you've got a consistent liar and person who's backed Craig White, what are we meant to believe?
Exactly. It's always good bedtime reading, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Anyway, we'll move on now and we'll go to the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Right, so the classic match this week is going to be slightly different for the fact that it's the first time that we've done this and I don't really remember much of it. My football supporting career started literally just after this game, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass it over to Dave because I don't remember too much of it. I've obviously looked into it after and I've seen snippets of it, but Dave, you're the man for this game or two games, as it were.
I'm sure any of our listeners out there over the age, you sort of 33, 34 year old, these two matches here are possibly the games that you've watched over and over again more times than any other. And the reason that I picked it was because I believe yesterday was to the date of the second leg. Of course, I'm going to be covering the two matches that took place in 1992. It was one of the best European results that our club has had, possibly, you know, apart from us winning the Cup Winners' Cup, getting to the final of the UEFA Cup. This could possibly be the greatest result for our club out with those times, and it was, of course, the Battle of Britain that took place against the English champions Leeds United. The first leg was on the 21st of October 1992. I had a wee look, actually. I was looking over some of the squad that we had back in that day, which is incredible. We only brought in two players that season, which was Dave McPherson, which we bought for Hearts for 1.3, and we brought Trevor Stephen back in from Marseille for 2.4 million. I don't know if you can remember much about Trevor Stephen, Derek. He was a fantastic player for Rangers, one of the most consistent players that we had. But looking at the squad that we had, it was a golden age. Just before we signed the likes of Brian Loudrup, but we went over four and we're talking about the players that we missed out, Chris Waddle and all that. But if you look at the squad that we had, with the likes of Andy Gorham, David Robertson, Richard Goff, Dave McPherson, John Brown, Ian Durant, Stuart McCall, Alan McCoys, Mark Catley, Peter Hustra, Kuznetsov, Mikhail Achenko, Dale Gordon, Trevor Stephen, Ian Ferguson, Nigel Spackman, David Hagan, Sandy Robert, Gary Stevens was still there, according to this, but I think he was one of the players that maybe went out that season. But we had an absolute fantastic squad. Yeah, to tell you, the players that we got rid of that season were John Spencer, Paul Rideout, and Nigel Spackman. But all of these players, if you take away the British fact, out of that huge squad that we had, there was only three players in that squad who weren't either Scottish or English. So that maybe shows you the quality player that we had. I think that was back when we actually had quite a decent Scottish national team as well. But some quality players, some legends in the team then. So, as I say, that game, as soon as Leeds United, they were put back into the cup, kind of by default. They played a team, I think it was a German team. There was some sort of problem with the game that they had, and Leeds United were reinstated back into the Champions League. It was the first ever Champions League qualifying, and we played Leeds United, and I can remember I was only 16 at the time, but I was so, like, absolutely ecstatic. As soon as that, we found out we were playing Leeds. The English media, on the other hand, were taking it that Leeds United were playing some tiny team for an island away, you know, in the Faroe Islands or something like that. Leeds United were going to whitewash us. They were the champions of England. They had all these quality players. Rangers basically had no chance. The first thing was that the governing bodies decided that there was going to be no away fans at any of these matches. I think they were expecting that there'd be a lot of trouble. So when Leeds United came to play Rangers at Ibrox on the 21st, there was no Leeds fans there. Ibrox was absolutely rocking. The noise was unbelievable. Rangers set up with Andy Gorman goals. They had John Brown, David Robertson, Dave McPherson, Richard Goff in midfield, Trevor Stephen, Stuart McCall, Ferguson and Ian Durant, and then up front, of course, the legendary strike force of Alan McCoist and Mark Hatley. Leeds United and their team, they had John Lukic in goals, who we'll come back to in a minute. They had guys like Tony DiRigo, another player who we were linked with quite strongly at the time. Of course, Gordon Strachan in midfield, Gary Speed, Gary McAllister, David Batty, all class players. Up front, Lee Chapman and Eric Cantona. So a formidable Leeds team, a formidable Rangers team. It was going to be a cracker. Everything basically happened in the first half. The game kicked off. The noise coming from Ibrox was unbelievable. That was silenced on the second minute.
And it's a little Gordon Strachan to take it. Into the near post, headed away by Robertson. Oh, a marvellous goal by McAllister. Well, what an incredible start. Just over a minute gone.
There was a corner. Gordon Strachan took the corner. The corner was headed out straight to the feet of Gary McAllister on the edge of the box, who hit an absolute rocket of a shot. Absolutely fantastic goal, right in the top corner past Andy Gorham. Nobody could have saved that. It was a wonder goal. Ibrox was silenced, just temporarily silenced, but it was silenced at that point. The English media were taking it, oh, it was a great goal. We are the English champions, they are Scottish champions, this is going to be a whitewash. But
corner kick awarded, and of course David McPherson and Richard Goff have moved right into the 6-yard area. As Ian Durant strikes the ball, Lukic commits himself, and the ball's over the line. It's a goal for Rangers. Well, a complete miscue by the goalkeeper. 20 minutes gone. The goalkeeper tried to punch it clear, the ball crossed the line.
Well, this is dreadful goalkeeping error here by John Lukic.
On the 21st minute, Rangers got a corner. Ian Durant took the corner and it flew up into mid there, and John Lukic jumped up and fisted the ball right into his own goal to make it 1-1. The John Lukic, I'll give you a wee story at this. John Lukic blames to this day the floodlights at Ibrox for that goal from not being able to see, saying that he was blinded. A few seasons later, we played a friendly that we played against one of the English teams. It might have been Arsenal, I'm not sure. But John Lukic was in goals, and there was a guy sitting in front of me in the Govan stand, and every time that Lukic got the ball, he would scream at the top of his voice, "Blinded by the light!" And we're like, what the fuck is he going on about blinded by the light? And every time he got it, he kept screaming this at the top of his voice to a wee guy next to him, said, "Oh, what are you going on about?" And he explained, you know, about Lukic in the game at Ibrox when he was playing for Leeds, was blinded by the light. So then, from then on, every time Lukic touched the ball, there must have been about 100 folk all singing that song, Blinded by the Light, every time that he touched the ball, which was brilliant. So, that was 1-1. We were well up for it then. The stadium was starting to go ballistic again. And then, on the 37th minute, another corner to Rangers.
Trevor Stevens' corner! Ali McCoist!
Trevor Stephen took the corner. Mark Hatley with an incredible header, bullet header. It was straight to Lukic, but there was so much power on it that Lukic could only parry the ball out. And who was there? The king of the rebounds, poacher extraordinaire, our manager, Super Ali, managed to hit the ball. It sort of bounced down into the net. That made it 2-1 to Rangers, and then we really thought that we were going on. We had the wind behind us. We were playing really well at that point. We thought we were going to go on and get a few. But the second half was a bit of a damp squib, to be fair. There wasn't much happened in the second half, and it finished 2-1 to Rangers. Now, again, the English media at that point, oh, well, that was a one-off. Leeds got beat. They've got the away goal. Ellen's Road will be expecting at least 300 to Leeds, but how wrong they were, because on the 4th of November 1992, Rangers went down to Ellen's Road. We know Rangers fans there. Everything was against them. They had that very slender lead. But as nearly all Rangers fans out there, we've watched these goals so many times. It's unbelievable. And I watched it again on YouTube last night, knowing that I didn't really have to, because I knew exactly what happened. But again, Rangers lined up. There was only one change to the team. Trevor Stephen didn't play. Dale Gordon came in. And it was the same with Leeds United. Chris White was out of the team and David Rocastle came in. So again, the game kicked off, and on the third minute, Andy Gorham had the ball in his hand, kicked the ball right up.
There's Durant challenging for it, it breaks to Hatley. Oh, and Hatley has scored a sensational goal for Rangers. 2.5 minutes gone, and Mark Hatley with a mighty shot which gave Lukic no chance whatsoever.
Oh, an incredible strike by Mark Ketley, his ninth goal of the season, his second in the European Cup.
What a start to this game.
I believe it was Ian Durrant that jumped up for the ball. The ball sort of spun off the top of Durrant's head and it went to the sort of left-hand side of the edge of the box. Mark Ketley had the sort of side to goal. The ball was dipping and he just battered the ball. It went right, looked right over Lukic, right into the corner of the goal. Lukic was absolutely nowhere. Made Lukic look like an absolute fool, to be fair. There was a fantastic volley. That was Rangers on the way. They'd got the away goal. They'd silenced the crowd completely. It was a sort of stunned silence as well, even for the commentators who were like, you know, a fantastic goal there by Hatley. Totally unexpected that we were going to do that. And then, possibly, we talk about great goal celebrations, but if you go back to Mark Ketley when he scored that, that was the one where he just sort of ran and jumped to his hands out in the air. I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
No, I've seen that, yeah.
Eric or no. Another one of these moments that we'll always remember when we think of certain players, and that's one that I'll remember with Mark Ketley. Then the next goal, when we scored, was in the start of the second half.
Nice little left out by Ketley, and here's the break on. It's Ian Durrant, through to Ketley. McCoy's on the far side. Gary Speed is racing back to provide the cover. Here's Ali McCoist. Oh, he's done it! Ali McCoist for Rangers. 58 minutes gone. And surely Ali McCoist wraps it all up. Ali McCoist scores his 29th goal of the season. And the most vital of his career. Look at his face there.
Leeds United were on the attack. John Brown makes the tackle at the edge of the box. The ball gets played out to Ian Durrant, who was sort of on the left-hand side of his own half. One-touch stuff. Durrant ran with the ball in front of him. One-touch where he hit this incredible sweeping ball over to Mark Ketley on the opposite side. Ketley ran over diagonally with one-touch. Another incredible cross right over the face of the goal. Ali McCoist was coming in at the back post with a header, pushed it to the Lukic's opposite side of the goal. In my opinion, one of the best goals we've ever scored, certainly at that level, in that stage. It was all one-touch stuff. It's something that I think every single one of us has seen that goal before. It was sheer class. I was sitting watching it in my living room, going absolutely ballistic when we scored it. Couldn't you believe we scored that? And then we basically just controlled the game after that. Leeds knew that they were out. Eric Cantona scored a consolation goal at the end. But Rangers were absolutely outstanding that night. And I think it showed everyone watching that game that we had arrived on this big stage. And if it wasn't for some dodgy decisions and a wee bit of luck, we could have maybe even went on and won it that season.
There goes the final whistle. Leeds United 1, Rangers 2. Rangers go into the Champions League. A great night in the history of Rangers.
I mean, as I said at the start, I don't remember much of that. I remember more of the actual Champions League campaign after that. So you're only talking a few months, mind you. But I've obviously since went back and watched parts of it and watched the goals and tried to soak up as much as I could of it. And it was just fantastic. Because the fact that we were perceived as underdogs as well, especially by the arrogant English media, which has been a feature of the media ever since, really. They haven't learned a lesson from that. It's just the arrogance. But it was absolutely fantastic. As you said, probably one of our best ever results in Europe. I mean, we certainly did arrive that season. That was, I'll go down in history as probably our best ever season, and it was just a great time to be a Rangers fan. Just unfortunately, I'm just getting into football at that stage. And
yes, it'd be fair, you would have been rather young at that stage, because I was still a teenager back in that game. But it was a great night, and any of the younger listeners out there, if you've never actually went in and saw the game, which I'm sure the vast majority of you have, just to see the two goals that Rangers scored in Leeds, especially the second goal. The play was incredible. It was a fact that two passes and then Ketley crossed the ball in for that header. It was one of the best counter attacks that you'll ever see watching a game of football. It was absolutely brilliant. So if you've not seen it, go and download it on YouTube. It is there and you'll be in for a treat.
And I may be wrong, but one of our future stars was playing for Leeds in the second leg.
Are you talking about someone who was on the bench in that match?
Yes.
That's right, Mr. Rod Wallace.
That was the man, yes.
Yep, he was on the bench that night. I believe he came on not too long ago, but he was playing for Leeds at that point. You're absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. So he must have been a very young man then.
Yeah, exactly. So, like I said, I'm sure the vast majority have seen this game, but if you go onto YouTube and see the goals that we scored in the second leg, absolutely phenomenal. So, it was a great game. I hope you've enjoyed that one. I know we've had a few people saying they're enjoying their classic match section, so they certainly were two matches to remember.
Yep. So, we're going to finish this off now, and we are going to cover some news.
Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy. Will McAvoy. I'm Will McAvoy. Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy. This is Newsnight from New York City. I'm Will McAvoy.
Just a couple of points to go over in the news this week. Firstly, we're going to have to obviously mention the sad and shocking news about Fernando Rixon. He'd done a TV interview for his new autobiography and he disclosed that he was diagnosed with motor neurons disease. Absolutely shocking thing to get so young as well. Very sad, and if anybody's seen the video, it's really hard to watch. It's obviously done in Dutch, but you know, you can see the emotion running through him, and it's just a really, really sad thing to see.
Yeah, it's worrying because Fernando's a year younger than me, so it would be like somebody my age being told that sort of devastating news. I think what's even worse, everybody's highlighted the fact that there is no cure for it and there's no any treatment for it either. I believe there are different strands of the disease, right enough, and he was going to be going back to specialists to see how the exact strand that he's got. So we just hope and pray that Fernando's got a lot of years left that he can still enjoy life. And I'm sure there's been a lot of talk going about that there is going to be some sort of benefit match for him with Rangers, so I'll certainly be going along to that one. But we just wish Fernando all the best. We hope that the strand that he's got isn't as severe as some of the other ones that we've heard. I'm certainly not an expert in this disease or knowing anything about it. I'm only going by what I read, but certainly our thoughts and prayers for the whole of the Rangers community are with Fernando and his family at this time, because it must be absolutely horrific for him.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great to see from all sides of the divide as well, the outpour of sympathy towards Fernando. He divided opinion even from our own fans, but I mean, certainly nobody deserves this type of thing to happen to them.
Yeah, no, it's been great. He's had a lot of messages of support, even by our rivals manager as well, that gave him a really good message of support as well. So it's good to see. It puts everything in perspective. I know that's the old cliche that we've been hearing, that there's more to life than football, but for somebody so young with a family to get diagnosed with something like that, it's horrific no matter who you are. Like I said, our thoughts are with Fernando, and we'll just have to give him all the support that he needs.
Yep. Next bit of news, we touched on it earlier, Ramsden's Cup final is at Easter Road. Quite rightly, McCoist and most of the fans are not happy at this for the fact that it's a smaller venue. McCoist believes it should have been at Parkhead, and he says if they do had to make it Edinburgh and it had to be a football ground, then why not make it Hearts to allow them to get some money considering they're in administration? Not too sure about that point, mind you, but...
No, I'm the same, and I think there'd be a lot of Rangers fans would be a wee bit miffed about that as well, to be fair, but... It's a strange decision. I don't even know, apart from Ibrox and Parkhead, I don't know which stadium has got the biggest capacity in Scotland. After that, I've never really took too much notice in things like that. So has Easter Road got the biggest capacity after that? I'm sure it can have.
Well, obviously, when you think about it, you've got Ibrox, Parkhead, Hampden. And then from capacity stands, you've got Murrayfield, which I'm guessing was a non-starter because they weren't going to give the money to the rugby union. So
yeah, it's a pretty poor show, because I'm sure if there was 30,000 tickets available for Rangers fans, they would have been snapped up no problem.
Yeah.
Possibly even about 40,000 tickets would have been snapped up no problem. So they certainly wouldn't have had half full stadium if it had been at Parkhead. I think the vast majority of the stadium would have been full, which is possibly fullest it has been this season, to be fair. And we would have sold our tickets, they could have made a shitload of money. I'm sure Raith Rovers would have brought through quite a sizeable support as well. So I think they've missed out on quite a big money-making scheme here, and there's going to be a lot of supporters are not going to make it to be able to see us playing in the first cup final that McCoy's been in. So I'm quite disappointed in that. The decision's been made, we're just going to have to move on from it, unfortunately, and live with it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think one of the reasons you were talking about money-making schemes there is I think that it was maybe something to do with Ramsden's themselves, the fact that it would cost a lot more money to basically hire out Parkhead for the day. But as you said, they would have easily made the money back. So,
aye.
A bit strange anyway. But next one is the fact that the Scottish Cup, obviously with Hampden being used for the 2014 Commonwealth Games, that's out of bounds. So they've had to rearrange where the semis and the final get played. Now, the two semis are at Ibrox and the final is at Parkhead. Now, a lot of people are getting awfully het up about this for the fact that, well, you know, that shouldn't be right. They shouldn't have decided the final when the favourites are still in the competition, being favourites obviously being Celtic, and they're going to have effectively a home tie. There's a lot of people, for me, getting really angry about it. At the end of the day, what was the other decision? You know, it's something that I really don't give a shit about right now. It was going to have to be played in probably one of the two grounds. Get over it.
I mean, right at this moment in time, Celtic haven't exactly got the best cup record. I'm annoyed at myself that I'm even talking about them in a football sense, but they've not exactly got a great cup record as it is. Neil Lennon's not got a great record in the cup, as we don't have anyway, so who's to say that they're even going to be in the final? To be fair, I would be delighted if Rangers got to the semi-final of the Scottish Cup and we were playing at Ibrox. I would be absolutely delighted with that, and to think that we even had a chance to get to the final, you know, is beyond what I was expecting this season. So I mean, if Rangers do get to play the semi-final at Ibrox, fantastic, I'll be delighted with that, and if they get to the final, then even better. But you know, you don't count your chickens until they've hatched. There's no way, you know, they're going to say that Celtic are going to be in the final because they do have a bad cup record, and you know, since Neil Lennon's came in. So let's just see what happens. I don't know what the score is. How much money do Rangers get for allowing the stadium to be used for the two semi-finals? Will we get quite a fair whack in the money that's generated for those two matches?
I think, I mean, just given that, is it not like for the actual fans, it's like almost like a 50-50 split, but obviously in that, again, there's a cup for the ground as well. I don't know what that stood for when it was Hampden, obviously, because it's an SFA competition and it's going to an SFA ground. Well, I suppose Queen's Park would get a cut of the money then, wouldn't they, because they own it.
Or do they just lease it off?
I don't know how that works. I mean, there certainly is money.
If we are certainly going to be making extra money for two matches, then fantastic. Like you said, I'm really no bother about where the final is going to be, because at this moment in time, I think we'd be very, very lucky to be there. And like I said before, there's no guarantees that they're going to be there either. So we'll wait and see what happens. Yep. But one of these things, it's been decided, we need to get on with it and just hope and pray that we're actually going to be taking part in these competitions.
Yep. Absolutely.
The one wee bit of news that I heard, quite a funny one that I thought, I had to read it a few times to believe what I was reading. I don't know if you've seen, there's a few things on Twitter that somebody had highlighted, and I actually went in and I read the full story, and it was about Joe Kinnear down at Newcastle. As you know, Joe Kinnear, ex-manager years ago, he's been given a job for Newcastle. I think he's had various jobs, you know, since he's been to Newcastle, and he was apparently recently on a scouting trip at a Capital One Cup match for Birmingham against Swansea. Did you hear about this one?
I never know.
No. And he went on a scouting trip to Birmingham, and on that night there was a particular youngster playing for Birmingham. I believe he's from Northern Ireland. His name's Shane Ferguson, and he was playing for Birmingham that night and apparently had an absolute blinder. As I say, he's just a young guy. So Kinnear was absolutely raving about this guy, one of the best players that he'd seen in a long while. Definitely be a player that Newcastle would be interested in buying. So at the end of the game, he went and spoke to some of the officials at Birmingham City to inquire about him. Says to him, look, this guy is excellent. We would love to have a closer look at him. And they were all looking at him as if he was daft. And they were all laughing with him, as if to say he's winding us up. But he kept on talking about him, how great a player he was again. And they're like, you've been serious here, Joe? And he's like, of course, Sam. What is it? He says, Joe, he is a Newcastle player. He's here on loan. So I was like, surely. So he's been scouting his own player, basically, actually knowing that he plays for him, which is incredible. That is absolutely incredible. So there you go. We'll wait and see if Joe's correct, if this player's going to be a star in the future. Shane Ferguson from Northern Ireland. I'm sure if he drops out, then he'll be linked to us, like all the other players that have dropped out of these teams have been. But
as always,
I'm there for Joe Kinnear, knowing exactly what players are on his books already. So
brilliant. Just to wrap up here, if you want to contact us, you can do that through our Twitter account at iReadyPod. If you want to email us, it is iReadyPod@hotmail.com. And we also have a new Facebook account. So that's, we've only got about 18 likes so far. So please, if you've got Facebook, get out there and start liking us. Again, if you just search for iReadyPodcast, basically facebook.com/iReadyPod.
And I believe you maybe got one final thing to say, Derek, before we go.
Just one real last thing here. But we just want to say we did get a wee mention from a guy on Twitter called The Bovril. And he said that he enjoys Rangers pods with gay banter. So we've got a wee tribute to him here just in the outro. So I just want to say thanks very much for listening and goodbye.
Yes, thanks very much, guys. Goodbye.
I can always do like a wee nighttime session with him, so to speak, anyway.
Aye, there's your fucking key man up here.